Not long ago, the stereotype of a journalist was someone who could ask the right questions, take excellent notes, dig deeper than the average citizen, and of course, write well. One thing you didn't used to hear was the idea that journalists would be really good with technology, even if some of them were. Now, that is until the last few decades when it became painfully clear that journalists and technology need to come together if either one is to have a healthy future. Now, today on the program, we begin a new year while standing at the intersection of programming and journalism to see what we can see. From Wikimedia Deutschland, I'm Mark Fonseca Rendeiro, and this is Source Code Berlin. The necessity of combining technology and journalism is part of what inspires today's guest on the program, and many like her throughout the world, people who strive to bring tools to journalists so that they can better and more safely carry out their work. Perhaps not surprisingly, one hub for such media warriors is, in fact, Berlin. And beyond that, each year, in the final days of December, where can you find such individuals? Well, you'll find them sitting in one of the lecture halls or meeting up with journalists in the hallway or just having tea at the Chaos Communication Congress. Recently, at the 31C3, I caught up with Berlin-based programmer and data journalist Annabelle Church to discuss her experiences in and out of the newsroom, as well as the big picture. Where are we when it comes to connecting journalism and technology? Hello from Hamburg, Mark Fonseca Rendeiro with you at the 31st Chaos Communication Congress. And many people listening know this event as a gathering of hackers from all over the world for 4 days to laugh and show each other what they're working on, share information, worry about the future, not worry, maybe. Some people do that. And I have the great fortune of having met and to be right now sitting next to Annabelle Church. Hello, Annabelle.
Hey.
Good start. Annabelle, you come to this gathering. Look, we all come as individuals, and we're more complex than the jobs that we do. Our interests are many, I think, as are yours. But what is the original reason? What brings you to an event like this?
So I guess originally I came here only upon discovering the event, which was 2 years ago when I was an Open News Fellow at Zeit Online in Berlin, and I didn't know that Chaos or any of the camps and Congress events occurred, and I came here to see what a kind of historic hacker culture looked like and whether I could kind of integrate as a computer programmer from all the way over in New Zealand into this kind of scene in Germany and in Europe specifically. My Open News Fellowship is like primarily around, was primarily around coding for journalism, like coding in a newsroom for journalists and with journalists. And so I was kind of firstly very deep in the journalism scene and also very much a beginner in the kind of general European hacker culture, because like where I grew up and the kind of computer science that I did when I was growing up, there was like there's no hacker culture scene per se. So I really came to Chaos Communication Congress to see what it looked like, and it was specifically important last year because of all of the revelations that we've discovered around journalism and technology in the world. And in every way it was an impressive experience, not just the the event itself, but like access to the community, who are very lovely, seeing how deeply people think about the impact of what they do on society in general here.
Journalists at an event like this is a very recent development, and it's, for me, it's been quite impressive. And I wonder if you expect it as such, that journalism and be it software or issues related to doing journalism is such a big deal here.
So that's like, maybe my answer to that question is complicated. So I have an initial expectation around journalism and technology. I have that expectation that's built based on my experience working in newsrooms and being an Open News Fellow and co-organising Hacks and Hackers and really getting involved in this community. And for me, the distinction between the technology and journalism community versus the journalism or technology communities and industries are no longer apparent to me. So I expect journalists to be at these events. And when I turn up to Chaos Communication Congress and they are here, then that validates my expectation. Now, I haven't had that expectation my whole life. I definitely have, for a good proportion of my career in the tech industry, not even understood the role of computer programmers with journalists. And it was really only after the movement of like the news organization that I worked with, which was The Guardian, the movement of The Guardian into kind of digital savvy, digital first, new way of thinking around kind of journalism and the impact of journalism online. When they moved, I moved. And, you know, all of technology moved with it, right? So when I first started being a computer programmer, like the idea of doing stuff in the browser wasn't so cool. It was kind of like it hadn't happened yet. And now we do nearly everything in the browser, and we kind of fully expect that kind of experience as a user and as a coder and now as a journalist, right? We expect stuff to happen in the browser. We expect our reading experience to be in the browser, and we expect our life to happen in this portal. And so I expected journalists to be here. Did I think journalists would actually be at a full-on technology event like this? I don't think so. Like, I guess I'm surprised to see so many here.
Yeah. But you've said it really well, that these worlds are no longer separate. If they were ever, let's say they were 20 years ago, right? Technology and journalism had a sort of wall between each other. Although here I am holding a microphone. I mean, this technology has been around. But what you say makes sense to me, and I think a lot of people listening, that these two worlds, you're silly, if I may insult anyone, if you think that these two worlds have nothing to do with each other, if not are one and the same in some occasions. How did you first get interested in journalism, because your background was originally computer programming or computer science specifically?
By accident. I guess I sort of came to a point in my career in the tech industry feeling quite disparaged by the difficulty, the kind of superfluous use of very interesting technology to do very mundane or terrifying things like rebranding or finance or marketing. These things are like terrifying because they're a little soulless at times. Mm-hmm. And so working in technology for me, it was interesting because of the technology, and the domain became less and less interesting over time because I worked in many different domains and they were all not so fulfilling. Also, working in technology can be hard, especially if you're in some of the domains where you're a little more picked upon as a woman, per se. Mm. And so just on the eve of considering my options, I ended up working at The Guardian, and I don't mean that it happened by accident. I definitely applied for the job, and I definitely did get it, but I didn't know how different it would be. I didn't know that it would be a kind of radically different technology job. So it was different in that I was surrounded by technologists who cared about everything that they did, and they worked around journalists who cared about everything that they did. And that even though maybe at that time in Guardian's life, these two groups weren't working very, very closely together, they definitely felt that they were working towards the same goals, and they were building, in terms of technology, building technology products to support journalism, and journalists felt at least that this was a worthwhile thing to do. And this was amazing, to be in direct contact with people who were consuming the things that I built, and to be with people who were really deeply cared about the things that they built. And these technologists who work inside The Guardian, they're not just interested in the technology, they're actually interested in the application of the technology, and they have a very well-rounded view of the world. Like many, many of them, of the most exceptional computer programmers that I met inside The Guardian didn't have, say, computer science degrees. They had like physics degrees or philosophy degrees or English degrees, right? They discovered that they wanted to create things off the back of a need in the domain that they worked in. They didn't go and learn technology because they just loved technology for technology's sake. So one of the biggest takeaways of that was, at least you have to have a problem that you want to solve, and technology happens to be a means of solving that. Like, and it's not the only means of solving a problem. But the people who do technology and really care about it and really work in this industry, especially in journalism, are doing it because they think that technology is, at the very least, a decent attempt at solving some of these problems.
One of your interests is data journalism, and I say this because in the short time we've known each other, I've heard you speak about it. I know that you even met with data journalists or people interested in data journalism here at this event, didn't you?
I did. We ran a little workshop to get people who were interested in data journalism together to maybe talk about some of their projects or some of their problems, some of the solutions they're thinking of. And I think, you know, we did pretty good for the 1 hour time slot that we did. We walked through some of the projects people have been working on in Berlin and Hamburg, and one gentleman from who's been working out in South Africa. And the projects are really interesting, and I think it was a nice sample. I mean, my only regret is that of everybody in the room, I saw very few of the journalists who I know for sure actually are at this event in that room. And I think maybe we need to market the little workshop a little better.
Yeah. Well, and look, you're always going to get that. You didn't say this, I say this. You're always going to get the journalists who think, I already know everything I need to know. I already know everyone I need to know journalism-wise. I'm just here to get the interview, to write the story. So they're not interested in learning. I think what you get is the people who are curious. Or maybe you're right. Maybe they didn't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think journalists who come to Congress are probably also here to solve some of their own problems and issues that they perceive as technology having a solution. And it might be that a data journalism workshop isn't broad enough for those journalists to perceive it as a reason to turn up. So data journalism is very narrow, and I'm genuinely more interested in the very much broader field of anything that involves technology and journalism. And I think that's why I find meetup groups like Hacks and Hackers to be so interesting.
Tell us a little bit about that group.
So it's an international brand with chapters all over the world. I can't quite remember how many chapters there are. I do know that there have been two or three in Germany start just this year, so they're expanding quite quickly, at least in Europe. They've been running for 5 years. They started out in New York, and they the model is basically that any community that feels that they need a Hacks and Hackers can create one, and then they are blessed with the branding swag in which to do that. They can have a meetup page and they can meet up whenever they want, although I guess the general recommendation is meet monthly and talk about stuff that's relevant to your community. And what's relevant has to do with the definition of the words hacks and hackers, which is a hack is an old-fashioned English word which isn't really used anymore or very well understood even in England for a journalist, a kind of stringer of sorts. And a hacker is a word which we all know. We're sitting in Congress, so we should know that word by now.
People who play with model railroad trains.
Yeah, yeah.
I think no one knows that anymore, but the origin.
Anyway, the meetup is to bring journalists and technologists together, and maybe integrate them as a little bit of a community to talk about the things that they make and create and the problems that they want to solve and potential solutions that they might have. And they're often speaker events, so they often like occur in pubs or in spaces where people can get up and actually talk about the things that they have. The Berlin Hacks and Hackers runs two formats now, like every couple of months we have a drinking event where people get together in a pub and they just talk to each other, which is a nice way of getting to know each other. Mm. And once a month we have a speaker event where we get speakers from all over the place. Often we're very lucky to have speakers from outside of Germany come and speak because Berlin is such a lovely hub for the tech industry as well as online journalism. And we hope this year that we next year actually in a couple of days that we'll be able to start doing workshops that cater for the needs of our community. And we are not by any means the largest hacks and hackers in Europe. The UK beats us by quite a margin, but I do feel like we are very well centered in Europe, and that people come from all over to drop in on us when they're in town. So
let me shift gears slightly, but keeping it always personal, because who doesn't love to hear the personal side of Annabelle? Or look, I mean, you're a podcast fan, you know how the personal touch can make a program quite good, but we'll talk about podcasting in a second. Let's talk about your own move to Berlin, to Europe generally, before Berlin. You've told me, you know, New Zealand is its own world, see if I get this right, and that even at a relatively young age, you were looking to go out there. I think you called it going into the world. I don't know.
So there's a kind of, maybe it's a kind of a bit of a middle-class affectation, but definitely in New Zealand, there's this concept that you leave. And you see the world, that is, you know, everything outside of New Zealand and not Antarctica or Australia, and then you come back. And a lot of New Zealanders go out and come back, and a lot of New Zealanders go out and don't come back. And maybe the coming back is a year or 2 years or 10 years or 20 years, but they come back with the stories that they have lived, and they enrich again local culture and they change it for the better. So like a good example might be like that, you know, when I left New Zealand 9 years ago, we didn't really eat French cheese, and now we can buy French cheese in our markets because, you know, we've gone out into the world and we've brought back, say, for instance, a taste for French cheese. And so culture in New Zealand changes for the experiences of those that leave and come back. And so I was, as a small child, very aware that my oldest brother went and travelled the world, and it just looked like such a great idea that maybe from about the age of 7 or 8 years old, I saved every penny I had to travel, to travel the world. And when I finished university, I did exactly that. I bought a one-way ticket to London, and I figured if I found a job, that'd be great, and if I didn't, I'd just move to the next country.
Uh-huh. London was your gateway.
London was my gateway. It being one of the few English-speaking countries in the world that would issue me a visa to live.
Yeah. Now, forgive me for not knowing this, but if you have that visa for the UK, does that enable you for the rest of the European Union to live? No.
New Zealand suffers like every country out of Europe in that you get a resident or working permit for the country that you wish to. In my case, it was the UK, and then it allows you only into the UK or whichever country. And I, so, yeah. Hmm. And visa fun is fun for the whole family. And New Zealanders are no exception, although they have a slightly easier time than some other countries.
Was that a similar experience when you came to Germany, that, again, hard time, but at the same time not as hard as perhaps for someone coming from the continent of Africa, or, you know, you name it, the certain... Did you also find this difficulty?
Yeah, I mean, I have to get a visa to live in Germany as well, and the difficulty with visas are that they cost money. Some countries more than others. And they only last for a short period of time, and you have to go through bureaucracy whereby you convince them that you're really worthy of a visa, mm-hmm. and that you will do right by their country and tax system.
So you have to tell them, for example, in your case, what you're going to do for work?
Yeah, so...
I think this is interesting for people who are considering this kind of move, or even for people who went through the pain. Let's talk about the details of this pain.
So it's different for different countries, and I've only really got experience of getting visas for two countries. In the UK, you apply for a visa, it allows you to do anything you want. You're not restricted in the work that you can do, although you need to earn an income if you want to renew that visa, because otherwise you won't be able to. And the UK charges a lot of money for that privilege. They also have reasonably lengthed visas. Most people can get visas for a couple of years. In Germany, I'm not sure what the standard visa is, but I've just gone through the process of getting a freelance visa, which is fine if you do something specific like Doctor of Medicine, and then I'm sure that you can get a visa that just says Doctor of Medicine on it. But I straddle this world between technology and journalism, and I would wish to do all of the things encompassed in that space. From doing some journalism and some computer programming to maybe doing data training and speaking and organizing events for people to get together and learn more about this kind of strange intersection of people. But in order to collect money for any of those things, it's required to be on a visa. In Germany, you can have either an artist visa, which is what a journalist would get, or you get another kind of visa, which is what a computer program would get. And it's interesting to try and convince them that you want to write all these things on one visa.
And so you can't. So officially, you're not supposed to do, and we're not going to talk about, but you know, you've got the journalist visa, so you're not supposed to do the tech stuff, or you've got the tech visa, and you're not supposed to do the journalism stuff.
Yeah, so they just require... I mean, so I have a visa that has a very limited set of words on it, and I need to send them many more letters to convince them to add extra words. And there's a difficulty in understanding what a modern computer programmer might get up to, right? Like they might travel a lot, and they might do a lot of different things, and it's all okay. Like it's absolutely okay to do all of these things, and you can the criteria by which you support yourself in a country it becomes apparent after time, but in Germany it becomes apparent after time, and it must match the wording on your visa.
So once upon a time you find yourself the Knight Mozilla
Open News Fellow. Yeah, so Once upon a time, when I was working at The Guardian, I met this lovely woman called Nicola, and she just happened to be one of these Open News fellows, and I didn't really know what that was. And suddenly, The Guardian actually had a hack week where all of the developers in-house stopped work for a week and got to hack on anything that they wanted to aid and abet journalism within the organization. And Open News, which supports these fellows living in newsrooms for a year, brought in their current cadre of fellows. They brought in their entire cachet of fellows. I don't even know what we call them.
A trove
of fellows, and so they hacked for a week with The Guardian. And this time I met them formally, and I understood that they basically were given remit by their Open News program as a part of their 10-month stint inside a newsroom to create things for that newsroom in an open source way, and to collaborate with communities all over the world and attend events and evangelize the wonders of technology and journalism, and basically build and make and do whatever they wanted for 10 months. The program supports people often from outside of the journalism sphere who are computer programmers to come into and work within a newsroom for a year. And the newsrooms are different every year, and the fellows are different every year. And they're up to their fourth run now. Mm-hmm. And in any case, I met Nicola, and she's such an amazing and inspiring woman. And she encouraged me to apply, and I thought, there's no hope. Mm-hmm. And I did it anyway, and I managed to get one of these fellowships. And you don't know where you're going to go in advance of them announcing that you've got the fellowship, and then because you interview with the newsrooms, but you have no idea if any one of them are going to pick you, and then.
You interviewed with newsrooms.
Yes, newsrooms. So, like, the selection process is kind of intimidating. You kind of apply, and you're one of this large pool of people who apply, and then Open News whittle down the pool to the viable candidates, and then the newsrooms who are in the running select all of their favorite candidates, and they do this for like two or three or four rounds until they have like just one or two candidates each, and then Open News help them choose which candidate would be best for their environment, and then they announce it to you that you have this fellowship. And the Open News fellowship takes computer readers, embeds them inside newsrooms, and the program is supported by Knight and Mozilla. And Knight, a journalism foundation, and Mozilla, a technology foundation that run this program. But the fellowships are not the only things that they do.
Oh, of course. And so there you are. You get the gig. You don't know where you're going to go. And where do you end up?
I end up in Berlin, embedded inside Zeit Online, which is the online arm of Die Zeit, a weekly newspaper in Germany, a kind of academic, highbrow, very well respected, very, very heavy newspaper, for which the online branch is very new and fresh and very small. There are only about 40 people, and they're completely separate from the print. And in fact, they're even in two different cities. The print arm and the printing occurs in Hamburg, so they're completely, completely separate.
The separation of the online and the offline.
Yeah, completely separate. That's how I ended up in Berlin. The decision to become an Open News Fellow was very difficult because I was going from one dream job to another. So it's like, yeah.
Boo-hoo.
Yeah. I did it.
And the experience, I mean, first of all, you're working in a newsroom that's in German primarily. But as you've said, you're all about the tools. and tools hopefully are language not dependent. It's the better word for that, agnostic. How was the experience? Was it indeed just as possible and challenging and as it was in your other dream job before that?
Yeah, so I think the Open Use Fellowship is a kind of remarkable, life-changing experience. Like, I haven't met any one of the fellows who can go back to normal life, whatever normal life was before the fellowship, because you get to engage with all of these communities from around the world, and you get to see and collaborate with people with at different levels of their kind of news and journalism evolution. Like, maybe they are just trying to tackle how to crunch some numbers to demonstrate a level of corruption in their country, or maybe they're you know, in New York looking at how to like do this ultimate visualization of data, and seeing the kind of spread of needs in journalism for people with a kind of tech savvy is remarkable and enlightening and terrifying.
Because they really need what you know. Or, I mean, you have journalists who are good at the traditional journalism side, the gathering of information, but the tools is where they need you.
Yeah, so, I mean, journalists need to become more tech literate, and the way to become more tech literate is to interact with people who have some technical literacy. And if the people in your newsroom who have technical literacy are the computer programmers, then communicating with them is the right thing to do. But it's very hard to do because it's very intimidating to talk to computer programmers, and actually Open News Fellows are the least intimidating computer programmers that you've ever met. They're there to help and hold hands and learn from the journalists as well, right? That the aim is that it's not a kind of parent-child relationship, but a kind of collaboration. And to work within a newsroom, so going from a newsroom like The Guardian that really speaks to the openness and communication, and it tries really hard internally to live the things that it preaches externally, to a small newsroom in Germany that has yet to have the fear of the death of print or whichever things is coming, to see them still processing some of the struggles that I saw The Guardian struggle with maybe 5 or 6 years ago is really interesting. And
is the destiny the same, you think? I mean, one would say, look, we're doing it all at different times, but all of these paper, traditional new ways of doing news, they're all going to go the same way.
I genuinely believe that the German news industry is statistically significantly different from the UK news industry, news and journalism industry. But, I mean, it's not... it's clear that the print is declining. It just might happen to be declining a little bit slower for some of the news organizations in Germany. And if not slower, then at least the start of the decline is coming a little bit later. But it still exists. Yeah, in Germany, there's a different perspective around print. That there's a very strong book reading and newspaper reading culture still. So I don't think that some news organizations are feeling it or acknowledging it as quickly as you have seen in America or the UK.
Yeah. And I'll throw in one other area besides print and reading generally, podcast listening. But where do the podcasts that you listen to come from?
I have to admit that most of the podcasts I listen to are from the UK and the US. None of them are from Australia because they speak funny like I do, and that's humorous to listen to.
And primarily focus what topics, what types of podcasts that interest you?
I would say that I'm more interested in a certain radio show style than I am in the topics. So I listen to things like This American Life and Radiolab, which everyone listens to, apparently. But I also listen to things like The Memory Palace and 99% Invisible, which have a kind of beautiful audio quality and really lovely storytelling technique. I listen to Planet Money and The Moth and all of these other things, and mostly I'm interested in any new piece of information that I can gather in a way that doesn't hurt, and good storytelling is a nice way of consuming that. So I aim for those podcasts.
Yeah, I'm a fan of the possibility of learning as you're going through your day. You were saying before, interesting by the way, and we hadn't covered that, that even in the newsroom you have this, you know, the journalists of traditional journalism or traditional way of doing journalism needs the technologist connected to journalism, but that they don't always understand each other very well, or one is intimidated by the other. And I'll tell you something I've had at a place like this, connecting it back to the Congress. You watch talks that are often now about tools, right up your alley, for reporting. Many of them about protecting your sources, of course. And obviously they're very important, for any journalist would acknowledge that. But at the same time, as I watch, and I don't think I'm alone here, but it's possible, the way you're told by people who are specialists is often this sort of, don't send an email that way. What are you, an idiot? And that, I immediately came back to that when you said, it's the way we talk to each other that matters, that is the difference between a journalist learning something and maybe even a technologist learning something. So sometimes I worry, and perhaps that's where we have a breakdown, this gap between the journalist doing a certain job and the people making the tools that could really benefit everyone, including the journalist and the consumer. Thoughts on this?
Yeah, so I think that technologists are very special kind of specialist. And that the knowledge is very highly prized, and if people don't have that knowledge, then it's okay to make them feel it. And in the world that I live in, when I have to communicate with journalists or people who are keenly interested in becoming more technically literate but aren't quite there yet, the worst thing that we can do is discourage them from their enthusiasm. They might not know the answers to everything, and they might not know the questions to ask, but they wouldn't be there if they weren't interested. And just like with new people in who come here, for instance, to Congress, you know, when people come up to you and ask you questions about the thing that you're doing, you answer their questions to the best of your ability and to the understanding that you think that they want to garner. And I think the real world should be like that too. Yeah, in this way, I think that Congress is very lovely, that people are very willing to engage with you at the level that you're at on the thing that they're working on, be it a piece of hardware or some piece of security technology. People here are very keen to impart that knowledge. I don't feel like that is that always necessarily happens in conversations with journalists, because I think sometimes they're considered too junior for their own good. They've got very complex problems that they're trying to solve, and their technological literacy needs to be higher in order to solve those problems. And the best thing that we can do is make sure that they get there without doing themselves damage, and we can't do that if we turn them, if we alienate them out of the gate.
Is that part of what you're up to? I mean, I've heard you say, I want to make tools for people doing good work, or something along those lines. I think I misquoted you.
Yeah, so my goal of the last summer, and maybe probably of the next one too, is to build tools that can be used by journalists. And so this can be everything from how journalists can work with data to visualizing stories, but also like how do investigative journalists or journalists mechanically do their job, and how can technology ease that process in a way that has them feel more comfortable with collaborating with technology and with others. A part of this process is communicating with the people that you're making things for, and I try very hard to communicate with as many journalists as I can, and one of the ways that I do that is that I co-organise this thing called Hacks and Hackers, and journalists can come up and tell me about the amazing things that they do, and I can tell them about the amazing things that that computer programmers do, and we can then collaborate.
And that's happening. I mean, what you're talking about is not just a dream. That is happening in Europe and beyond. These projects exist. If I run through your Twitter feed, I find many of these projects. You keep an eye out for interesting collaborations between journalists, technology, artists.
In my exposure through Open News and coming to Berlin and working in the news industry here and co-organizing Hacks and Hackers, I meet artists who work with technology. I meet journalists who wish to work with technology and do work with technology, and activists. They're everywhere in Berlin. It's such a lovely scene.
Yeah. So in that sense, place does matter to you. Again, and now we come full circle. At some point in your life, getting personal, you may or may not, you could always return to New Zealand, but geography seems to matter in what you're doing, at least at this stage.
Yeah, so it's hard to be in the middle of the European tech and journalism scene and watch it grow and help a little bit if I'm on the other side of the planet looking at penguins. And so I try and spend as much time as I can in Europe so that I can see these things change and help where I can.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's probably 1:30 in the morning. It's day three of this 4 days, for some a 5-day ordeal. Did I say ordeal? I meant joyful occasion. And I think we have to be very thankful, wherever you are in the world, I'm sure you're thankful to Annabelle for taking the time to sit with us. In the background, you've heard the sounds of the Congress. We're trying to be in a quiet corner, but there is some kind of a performance going on with cheering. It sounds like people are cheering for you every time you make a good point. And occasionally they play the recorder for you also, probably. So I hope everyone has enjoyed the background sounds, but above all, a big thank you, Annabelle, for taking the time.
Yeah, thanks.
You've been listening to Source Code Berlin at the 31st Chaos Communication Congress, which took place from the 27th to the 30th of December 2014, and more specifically, the observations and experiences of someone who's been instrumental in changing newsrooms from the inside in both Germany and the UK. And if you'd like to follow or read more from Annabelle Church, you can find her on Twitter at Annabelle Church, or go to her website, annabellechurch.com. Both will be available on our website, sourcecode.berlin. We spoke about hacks and hackers groups around the world, specifically the one in Berlin. One place to find more information about them is meetup.com/hacks-hackers-Berlin. Again, all that is on our website, which is also where you can go to subscribe, now with a handy one-click or two-click button, and you can also leave comments and see other programs that we've put out over the past few months. That does it for this edition of Source Code Berlin. Thanks to all those who've emailed or commented on the program via the website, Twitter, Facebook. Source Code Berlin is a Wikimedia Deutschland podcast. Find us at sourcecode.berlin. Follow us on Facebook, Source Code Berlin, or on Twitter at SRC Code Berlin. Music featured on today's program was by Moldover. This podcast is published under a CC BY SA 4.0 license and edited by me. Until next time, I'm Mark Fonseca Rendeiro. Thanks for listening.
We are.
Let that happen. Yeah. It's all very forced when I turn on the microphone. I enjoy talking with people more if I don't have a microphone, I think. I feel like I'm ruining the evening or something.
It definitely is more intimidating when there's a large microphone in your face.
I'll work on that. I'll take that as technological advice.